Good afternoon. I got it right. I had to think about it. Does anyone here like puzzles? Puzzles, yes. Jigsaw puzzles, yes. You? Crossword puzzles. Mm-hmm. Okay, Wordle. Yep. Sudoku. Anything I've missed that you're just really super pumped about? What is it that we like about puzzles? During COVID, they turned out to be a great way to pass some time when we had nothing better to do with our lives. But we keep doing them. Why do we keep doing them? Is it that satisfying feeling when all the edge pieces, you finally find them all and you link up all the edges? Oh, such a good feeling. Because then all the middle bits make more sense when you know where the edges are. Is it the thrill of victory, of finding the hidden words? Is it the elation of solving all the clues to the puzzle without the help of Google? Or maybe with a little help from Google. Maybe we just enjoy the accomplishment of resolving something challenging. We like figuring things out. Even simple things, just because it makes us somehow feel right that we have some kind of sense of control in our world, that something in all the mess is solvable. It feels like an accomplishment. We like our logic. We like to work out things. We like to find our way through. And in our text today, that's kind of where the Pharisees are. They are puzzling about who Jesus is. It's a very important question, and it's been a challenge for them for the last couple chapters of the book of John. They've been trying to figure out who Jesus is, and Jesus is not making it simple for them. He's put them purposely in an unsolvable predicament. In John chapter 9, Jesus healed a man born blind. And you would think that this would be something to celebrate, but not for the Pharisees. A healing of such magnitude can only be attributed to the Messiah, the one they've been waiting for generation upon generation. But Jesus healed a man on the Sabbath, breaking a key cardinal rule of Judaism, making himself basically a sinner in the eyes of the Pharisees. How can this be? How can a sinner heal a man born blind? How can a sinner be the awaited Messiah? This is quite a conundrum, quite a predicament that they are in. And in contrast to our little daily puzzles, the stakes are much, much higher. Jesus has been making claims about being equal with God. If he speaks the truth, then the Pharisees must admit that he is the Messiah, and they owe him their devotion. But if he does not speak the truth, he is guilty of blasphemy and must be put to death. Pretty high stakes. And they're not taking this lightly. They've been investigating Jesus' teaching and miracles. They talked to the man who was healed to see what he thought about Jesus. They talked to the man's parents to verify that indeed the man had been born blind and that he had indeed been healed. They've been trying to reason through their theological questions arising from the circumstances that Jesus is creating, but they cannot come up with a clear answer. And to me, it seems the Pharisees' frustration is showing through when they accuse Jesus of being demon-possessed or delusional or out of control, because they also know that a demon cannot do what Jesus has done. They just don't know what to do with him. And from the reading today, we see that the Pharisees finally corner Jesus at the Jewish temple at a feast because they just can't contain themselves anymore. They can't bother to be feasting when they have this burning question that needs to be answered. And they just want Jesus to put them out of their theological misery. They just want a straight answer. They want him to speak clearly on their terms and within the paradigm that they understand. If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly. They are done playing games. They want a yes or they want a no. Why did Jesus have to heal on the Sabbath? He could have picked any other day of the week, and it would have been so much easier on him and on the Pharisees, on everybody involved. But Jesus isn't interested in maintaining the status quo. He wants to upend the ruts and the well-worn paths and the predictable theologies, things that the Pharisees have maintained for generation after generation. So Jesus continues to give them the same unsatisfactory answer that he's been giving all along. I've told you already, but you didn't believe me. You've looked into the miracles, and you don't believe them. You can't hear me. You're not my sheep. He refuses to adapt himself to their paradigm. Jesus answers from his own unique perspective, which doesn't make sense to these religious leaders. They're so stuck in their paradigm, they cannot fathom an answer outside of their perspective. They've placed limits on the Messiah, and the box they're trying to fit him into isn't nearly big enough. Jesus purposefully defies the limiting belief system that they are trying to impose on him. If he answered plainly, they could walk away satisfied, and hopefully Jesus would be conforming to what they were expecting, and they wouldn't have to put two more thoughts into it. But Jesus wants them to continue to wrestle with who he is, because he is so much more than what or who they were expecting. Now, before we are too hard on the Pharisees for their lack of insight, I think we also need to acknowledge that we, too, place limits on who Jesus is in our lives. And there's no shortage of theological puzzles to sort through. Things like, what is the nature of the Trinity, actually, without saying anything blasphemous in the middle of it? What does it mean for Jesus to be fully God and fully man? Our brains can go off on these tangents with like textbooks and volumes, and on it goes. And what does it mean, the book of Revelation? Anybody got a clue what's going on in there? Right? There's so many questions that we can get so easily distracted talking about Jesus instead of talking to Jesus. And let's not forget the very significant problem of suffering in our world. If Jesus is all good and all loving and all powerful, why? Why? That horrible question, why? Why is there suffering? And it's one thing to argue this from a theoretical perspective, but when you're going through suffering, when you personally experience pain, that's when the rubber really hits the road, where we really have to dig down a lot deeper than our theoretical understandings of what's going on. And whether it be physical, emotional, psychological, social, or spiritual pain, it can be easy to doubt Jesus. Is he really good? And why am I suffering? Is he really loving? Does he really care what's going on for me in my life? And if we answer no to those questions, then he's not worthy of our worship. But if we answer yes to those questions, then we're left wondering why he doesn't use his power to help us get out of our situation that we're in. Why isn't he changing our circumstances, making things better, making things fairer, or making things easier for us? Is it something we did? Is it something we didn't do? Are we being punished? If we're being punished, why won't he tell us what we did wrong so we can change it and escape our suffering? Why does God feel so far away when we need him the most? We have very human needs to make sense of our circumstances. We need to find sense in suffering and find a reason to endure it. Because for whatever reason, sometimes we just can't escape it and we don't know why. These are the puzzles, and they're more than puzzles, the deep needs of our human existence, those things that keep us awake at night, those things that we just want to go to Jesus and just ask him, just give us a simple answer. Please, please give us a simple answer to this, because we're struggling. And it's so easy to get bogged down in the questions that we can't see what Jesus is doing in the middle of the mess. When the questions become all-consuming and take up every last little speck of our thought space and our heart space, we can become bitter. We can become resentful when Jesus doesn't answer us plainly. The problem is, we want an answer from within our own worldview. And so part of what we struggle with is, I think, Jesus trying to break through the way we think about things, to break through assumptions we've made, to make us dig deeper into those underlying things that we're holding on to, that we don't realize we're holding on to. And when he challenges us like this, we end up in tension and discomfort. We don't like tension and discomfort. We want to escape. We want to run. We want to do anything to help us get out of it. But what if we can't learn what Jesus wants us to know without challenge and discomfort and tension? What if we can't learn until we dig down deeper and challenge those underlying beliefs that we have? Yeah, it would be really nice if Jesus would just plainly tell us. But would we learn? Or would we walk away and say, yeah, thanks, Jesus, good answer, and move on our merry way? That's not who Jesus is. And I think Jesus' answer to us is very similar to what he said to the Pharisees. My sheep hear my voice. I know them. They follow me. So whether it's the Pharisees trying to understand the nature of the Messiah or us trying to figure out the nature of suffering, the answer is the same. Our questions and our discomfort might not be resolved, but our solace and our security comes in belonging with Jesus, in coming close to him, in pushing pause on all those questions, in letting go of the needing to have a good answer, and of just being close, of just sitting still and emptying our brains of all those thoughts and all those questions so that we can actually hear the voice of the shepherd, so we can actually hear Jesus speak to our hearts. Because when our brains are going off and answer the question, what's wrong with me, what's wrong with this, there's no peace. The peace doesn't come in the elimination of discomfort. It comes in the drawing close to who Jesus is. When we get into trying to resolve our questions about Jesus, we completely miss the point of knowing Jesus himself as a person. So do we have the courage to allow Jesus to unsettle our underlying assumptions? to challenge those tenets of faith or our interpretation of what we think it means? Are we brave enough to let him question our motives? Why we need these answers so badly? Do we dare allow the tension and the discomfort while he reshapes our perspective to match his perspective? We like feeling settled and secure in our knowledge, but our true security is not in that. It's not in resolving our theological puzzles. Our true security is in Jesus himself, his gifts, his promises, his eternal life. He is the good shepherd. He provides protection from anyone who would kill or destroy. No one, nothing, can snatch us out of his hands. No one is more powerful. No one can hold us more tightly, except for the Father, who also holds us tightly in his hands. So in the middle of all the questions and all the unanswered discomfort and all the unresolved tension, we are safe. We are in the hands of the shepherd. We do allow Jesus to change us and challenge us and take us deeper in him and walk beside him.